So first of all, tell me who you, what's your pronunciation of your name and who you are and what you've got to do with New Roots.
Of course. So I'm Baljeet Kamba, and I can help you pronounce that name. So my name is Baljeet Kamba, and I'm the chair of clinical sciences. I'm also a professor at Bastyr University, and I'm a researcher. And so I particularly love researching with nutrition and how it influences our mood. So the whole nutrition and mental health angle. So that's a lot of what I do. And then with New Roots, I work with them in their Canadian chapter, Vitazan. So I work with them there, and I do things like I help out with the medical advancement panel that they have. And so I'll work with them on various things.
Yeah, because I'm, you know, literally we're just going to just chat. So yeah, I love, it's much better like that, really. Yeah. So I love herbals, and as nutritionists, we don't probably know that much about herbs, you know, because we, our training isn't in that, but I mean, they're so powerful, aren't they? So tell me, I mean, obviously off the back of this pandemic, obviously the big chat is about mental health, isn't it?
Yes.
So what are you seeing there in America? What are you seeing? Mm-hmm. What do you think the fallout is?
So, you know, it's interesting. So I'm a naturopathic doctor by training. So, you know, I was working in psychiatric clinics in Canada and Toronto before the pandemic. And it was interesting because a lot of the struggles at that time that people were talking about were really focused on, you know, stress, anxiety, the run of, you know, those sort of things where, people, maybe they were on medications or they were off medications and they wanted to lower them and all that sort of great stuff, which is fantastic. But now the pandemic hits and all of a sudden everyone's forced into being in isolation. We're social beings. We're not supposed to be in isolation, especially for lengths and lengths of time. And so then you started to hear of people started to there, you know, people who didn't have anxiety or depression before all of a sudden develop anxiety and depression. And then, and other things that are they're associated with social anxiety or associated with like isolation. And then now, as we're sort of kind of in the tail end of things, we're in this mix of like, you know, some people are gone, some people are here. Now we're ending up with, you know, we're dealing with the fallout of all of that. And so the fallout is now where we're seeing people having this ongoing anxiety and depression that started when they were in isolation, social isolation. Now it's sort of spun into this like drastic thing because look, when you're indoors, you're not getting sunshine. You're probably not motivated to eat. Cause look, social eating is very social and you're not out with your friends or family. So you're not getting that engagement. And so, you know, from a nutritional standpoint, you're not getting the foods that you need, not just to sustain your body, but to feed your brain, which is the most metabolically active organ in your whole being. So now I'm seeing all these, like, so especially kids who were like kids with like all these anxiety issues. Now I'm seeing adults in the elderly population as well. I'm seeing a lot of stuff going on with them too. So it's really interesting to see sort of the fallout that's happened since then.
So do you see sort of, if you were to sort of think about an uptick, you know, like the percentage, I mean, obviously you might not know precisely, but what would you say that is? I mean, 20% more or 50% more, or really you can't count it?
You know what? I can itemize it according to my clinical practice. So I practice, because I teach at Bastyr, I also supervise students, naturopathic students in clinic. And so my shift is focused on mental health. And so I can, you know, obviously, you know, I'm a little biased because patients who are coming to see me are largely coming to see me for mental health stuff. But, you know, the fallout from all of the pandemic, I'd have to say like 50 to 75% of my patients. Now, like I said, people come to me for mental health, but, you know, they also come to me for other things. But I'm seeing more and more people coming to me for anything that's not, you know, that's not just outright saying, hey, I'm anxious, hey, I've got anxiety, but things around it, like, oh, you know, I've got this ongoing headache for, you know, for a week and I can't seem to shake it. Or all of a sudden my stomach is hurting and I've got all these digestive issues that I've never had before. You know, I'm alternating. I've got that IBS, that irritable bowel syndrome where I'm going between
diarrhea. So you think it's gone into the body almost? I mean,
Exactly. It's now manifesting itself within the body because, you know, maybe we're not able to express the emotions. Mm. So now it shows up in the body in other ways, right? Headaches. Mm. Rashes.
Well, it's really interesting because I was speaking to somebody yesterday, because I'm a nutritionist, but and he was like, actually, we're talking about because one of my big passions is soil health, actually, just, you know, it's like microbiome of the soil and all this thing. And he led him on to this conversation about climate change, and his anxiety was around literally really serious mental health, around total anxiety around what he's being told about climate change and meat and eating meat and all these things. And he's just like totally and utterly could not look at a piece of meat. I mean, it was a really serious mental health problem. So I'm just wondering, you know, there's anxiety, of course, from the pandemic, but there's anxiety about all sorts of other things too. I mean, not least, there's a flipping great war that's erupted. You know, it's not just the pandemic, but it's just like, it's been stretched out to all these other things as well. So no wonder people are feeling it.
Oh yeah, for sure. And so Kate, like you must totally appreciate this, but you can see that. So one of the things that I harp to my patients about, I say, look, you know, we used to plant our foods into the ground, toil the land. And like, you know, we would take foods from there, you know, whatever we've grown. And then, you know, some of it would be left behind and those would replenish the soil. And so our soil becomes this nutrient dense soil. But now with modern farming practices and industrialization, we're planting foods and, you know, we're not replenishing the soils anymore. And so we're getting these foods that are not as rich in nutrients. And now you add in, you know, all the climate change and you add in all the other things that are just, you know, sort of spitballing or just like causing like this snowball effect of all these other nutritionally based issues starting from the ground up.
Well, it's you know, and of course the disruption of communities, because obviously with these very individualistic based communities, of course a lot around mental health would be about actually you know, the others, everybody listening might know this because I've bored them on about it, but I do anthropology, so I'm doing an MA in anthropology of food. And part of that, I had to do medical anthropology. So we look also at mental health through those eyes, through anthropology. And you see that in other societies like Madagascar, for example, things like schizophrenia are owned by the community. Whereas in the West, it's literally your own individual problem. But in other societies, it's kind of like accepted as part of the fabric of society, mental health. It's not something that in effect you anguish over individually. It's everybody anguishes over it, you know, which is quite interesting, the difference. So, of course, in the West, you're on your own. If you're mentally ill, it's your problem that you're dealing with. And it's a very difficult journey, isn't it?
Absolutely. So, you know, so again, as an academic, you're going to appreciate this. So I'm doing my second doctorate right now in education, and I'm focusing a lot on, you know, BIPOC individuals, so Black, Indigenous, people of color, and education, especially enrollment and recruitment within health professional educations like nutrition or naturopathic medicine. So one of the things that I've been studying is that, hey, these are all, and you'll find the parallels within what you're studying too. I was like, you know, all these parallels that we're seeing, here's medicine and health that's being studied for, that is, you know, the medicine of the world, but, you know, it's only available for certain people, or only certain people succeed in it. But listen, these are the cultures that we're coming from, these cultures that are collectivist cultures, like how you talked about Madagascar, or like myself, I'm South Asian by background. So, you know, being Indian means that I come from this collectivist society. So I remember it was interesting. I had this one patient, and I remember I was working in this one clinic in Oakville and in just outside of Toronto in Canada. And my background, so being that if you see my name, Baljeet Kamba, my name is very, in our culture, you can tell what region I'm from, what part of India I am, and my background. So if one was to read my name, who is South Asian, they could tell pretty much right away that I'm Punjabi, so I'm from the north. And so Punjab is divided into two. It's part in Pakistan, part in India. So I'm from the India side. And now I'm in this clinic in Oakville, and there's this one woman who came to see me, and she was from Pakistan. She was Punjabi as well, but from the Pakistan side. And she was really quite intimidating, never addressed her health before, but she wanted to go to somebody who could understand her language and her foods. Now, she had depression, but she didn't know what depression was because it was expressed differently for her, right? So she was like, well, she didn't have a name or a label for it. She was like, well, I feel sad sometimes, but then I pray, and this is where I explore that. She called it like a darkness. She gave it a color, which that was really unique. So she gave it a color, she gave it a form, and then it was something that the other women would talk about. And then she wanted to see me because she thought I would understand it. So then, and we talk about it from a cultural standpoint, which is very different than say, if I was to get like a very Eurocentric person who would come in describing, their depression, which is really, we have a DSM diagnosis, we know what it is. It's very plain and simple. But when I'm looking at these collectivist cultures, like the ones I came from with these like multi-generational homes, women are like often collectivists and speaking together, then you get different representations of what quote unquote depression is. And it's not necessarily so textbook, but instead she's feeling lonely is what we itemized it down to, is that her depression was because she came from a collectivist society and she's come into this individualistic society and she's feeling lonely. And so we gave it a name and we gave it some work that we could do around it.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, it's all really interesting. I don't know if you've read the book. Have you read the book Crazy Like Us?
No.
Yeah, it's by Ethan somebody or other. It's great. It was written by a journalist actually, but it goes into these descriptions, especially in Japan. Well, the bit I read was about Japan taking antidepressants into Japan, and they didn't have really a name for depression. And in effect, I can't remember who it was, probably GlaxoSmithKline or something, invented a whole category, of course, that Japanese people could call depression, like something like lying a bit low under the Mount Fuji kind of idea. Yeah. And they basically invented that category to sell drugs to people in Japan. That was their aim, really. So, yeah. So, I mean, I think the West, in a way, the way we see it through this kind of labeling, and now you've got post-pandemic stress disorder, and all of these things. And actually, is it really that, or, in effect, it's kind of like it's nice in one big way because people feel distress and then you label it and then people feel, okay, through the DSM, people feel like they've got a categorization. And then they can get help for it, or even insurance in America, where you can tick the box and you can get help for it. But in one way, it still keeps that mental health as something that's a lonely journey for that individual person, as opposed to solving much more complex societal problems,
Oh, for sure. Definitely. And I think, you bring up a really great point about Japan. And so, I remember when I was doing, when I did my master's was looking at nutrition and mental health. That's where sort of the whole thing began. And I was looking at international food consumption patterns and how that related to mood disorders as well. And it was interesting when I looked at Japan, and as we're talking about these like different cultures of like collectivist versus individualistic cultures, first of all, what happened was in the rural parts of Japan, people were eating, plenty of fish, which has the anti-inflammatory EPA and DHA, which is great for our mental well-being and helps increase membrane fluidity within our brains. So here we are, these wonderful Japanese people in these rural countries eating this great food, being around their family and friends and culture and having all this sort of great stuff. Then they move into the more industrialized portion, like they move into the cities. And so when they move into the cities, all of a sudden now that's where those rates of depression started coming up, those rates of stress, depression, exhaustion, anxiety, all that sort of stuff, because their food consumption patterns have changed. Now they're eating this like processed and packaged food. So they're not getting this nutrient dense food that's helping to feed their brains anymore. Instead, it's starving their brain. And they're not around their family and friends anymore. So they don't have that social aspect, because we often think it just, you know, that because mental health is not just a one problem solution, right? It's multifaceted depending upon the individual, as we've been talking about, whether, you know, depending on where they come from.
Well, it's interesting. It's that sort of pharmacological idea of just, you know, a pill for an ill. And if you can find the neurotransmitter that's kind of not firing properly, you know, it's all interesting about that cultural aspect of, you know, things like scanning and scanning brains. And then actually, when we see brain scans, they're often in colors and we assume that's the brain. And actually, it's not. Obviously, they don't come in different colors like green and reds and yellows, you know, and how we interpret that, or even how people interpret the brain scans, the individual doctors interpreting the brain scans are still interpreting it. It's not actually fixed empiric science, actually. So it's just like all of this culture aspect. Obviously, that's why I love anthropology.
So what a great really angle to study. I love that you're studying that angle.
I had to put a pause on it for this, you know, because it got too much. It was because I finished my second year. I've got one more year to do, but I was doing it right in the middle of the pandemic, and I was doing medical anthropology then, and it was just like a brain warp, because I did my essay on the culture of medicine, you know, things like the culture of medicine. So looking at epidemiologists and really understanding that that's a culture and it has a hierarchy, like almost like a religious affiliations, you know, like it has a dogma, it has, and then you start thinking, God, is this real? You know, and so it sort of kind of slightly blows your brain out. And then I did my I did my essay on conspiracy theories and vaccines. So that was the last thing. I'm like, okay, let's give it a rest now. You know, so anyway, I hopefully will go back to it. If not this year, then I have to finish it next year.
Yes.
That's going to be the MA in the history of man, you know, but still.
You know, it's okay. Education is its own path. Like I had started a different doctorate and I was working through that doctorate. I did about 3 years into it. It was a doctorate of medicine. And then I left that program because it didn't fit well. I did the research and I loved the research side of it. And I published that, but I didn't like the where it was going. And then I left it. And then I came back and did a totally different doctorate and started right from the beginning again. And now I've got 1 year left. So I can appreciate that.
Yeah. So sometimes I think you're totally right. Sometimes it's just timing and the path, and you know, you exactly that. I mean, and especially at sort of this stage in my life, I'm not having to force myself to do this. You know, it's my own choice. But you know, it's and everywhere it's kind of like disrupted. So it's kind of like you know, I needed to get on with other things. You know, sort of like other work. You know, and not indulge myself in that. But anyway, I will go back to it. And So listen, tell me about, we're going to talk a little bit about the solutions now. So in sort of herbs, especially, and obviously you work with new roots. So if you can tell us how you sort of approach these various patients that you have.
Yeah, definitely. You know, so the key thing behind a lot of these is what I like to call like synergy. Right? You want to get things working together. So here we are working from the nutritional perspective. Like we're changing around their diet. We're helping them out, you know, reducing all the sort of stuff. And, you know, reducing their consumption of this, you know, like the Western or standard American diet type of food, all the processed and packaged food, as we call it. And, you know, because we know that one of the things that it's contributing towards is inflammation. Right. So this like grand inflammatory process that's happening within our body is contributing to depression. It's contributing to anxiety. Right. So all these states of inflammation. And so first we got to look at what triggers inflammation. Right. So we look at the food, you know, whether it's food consumption patterns of eating that standard processed food, whether it's, you know, the stress in our lives, whether it's a lack of sunshine, like all these things that are contributing towards developing this inflammation. So then what we want to do is we want to try to create a balance in other ways. So we can do things like making sure that the person is eating appropriately, eating this anti-inflammatory based food, and then combining nutraceuticals, which is wonderful. So with nutraceuticals like New Roots, what we can do is we can combine botanicals alongside the nutrients so that they have a bigger impact. And so a great example, and say, for example, if we were to work on, you know, as we talk about neurotransmitters and we talk about like helping to, you know, to see what we can do to help support the neurotransmitters within our body. So for example, as you know, serotonin, which is the one that helps us to feel happy and calm. We know that if we give our body a certain protein, which breaks down to the amino acid. So say, for example, tryptophan. Tryptophan goes down that serotonin pathway and eventually becomes serotonin. But we can't just give our body a slab of whatever turkey or lentils and be like, go, make me some serotonin, make me happy. It needs to have like the cofactors in between. And that's where, you know, using things like the combination of botanicals and nutraceuticals and nutrients really work well, because the nutrients, like for example, chill pill, that is part of New Roots, has got a combination, and it's got things like these B vitamins. And B vitamins are really important. They're kind of like the match that lights the fire to get that reaction going. But then you've got botanicals in there, things like passion flower or L-theanine. And these are all ones that have been studied to show that. So for example, passion flower works on relaxation, works on the GABA receptors. You've got L-theanine, which has been proven to help with relaxation. L-theanine comes from green tea. And so all these great things to work together with these micronutrients to help to make sure that you can create those helpful neurotransmitters in the end, because all these micronutrients we're supposed to be getting from our diet. But hey, if we've got inflammatory process, digestive issues going on, if you're eating, yeah, depending on the foods you're eating, then you're not getting these nutrients. So those are some key ways that we can get started.
Yeah. So you know, if you're looking at a patient, it's obviously the chill pill is something possibly if somebody's got anxiety. Have you got any other favorites? I mean, do you have an ashwagandha? I'm very fond of ashwagandha. Tell me about ashwagandha.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So ashwagandha is in that, in the Zen Plus. So the Zen Plus formula has, ashwagandha in it, but ashwagandha on its own. So there's been tons of studies. I'm famous for putting my patients on ashwagandha, but here's the thing. So ashwagandha doesn't like to work on its own. It does a great job of helping with stress. It helps with it helps out the adrenal glands, the ones that release our epinephrine. And so our cortisol release, like the stress response. So ashwagandha is called an adaptogen. So it adapts our stress response. So what it'll do is that if we're chronically in that state of high stress, then our body's threshold for releasing those stress hormones becomes lowered, so that even low stressors, like things that aren't causing like a high amount of stress, like say if somebody taps you on the shoulder or drops a pen, will cause a high stress response. So like you jump, you know, those are the situations, like if someone taps you on the shoulder and you all of a sudden jolt or jump, those are key indicators to say, hey, my stress response, my threshold for stress is really lowered if I'm having this massive stress response for such a small stimulus. So that's where products like ashwagandha really come in handy. But ashwagandha doesn't like to work on its own. It works really well when you combine it. So it works well when you combine it with things like holy basil or bacopa, or there's this asparagus root that it's often combined with called shatavari. So these are all really great ones that you can combine it with. And then you've got the nutrients that you can add to it, whether it's from a dietary perspective or a micronutrient perspective. So yes, ashwagandha, huge fan. I take ashwagandha. I put everybody on ashwagandha.
Ashwagandha is pretty safe as a sort of background herb and for long-term use, is it?
Yes. Ashwagandha is generally safe. Now, pregnant women, obviously we don't want pregnant women on it. And then when it comes to medications, if a patient is on a complex series of medications, I'll often take a look to see what their interaction profile is, just to make sure, you know, if they're on a thyroid medication, totally fine. If they're on like, you know, depending on the type of medications they're on, it, once we get into some of the complex ones, that's where I start to worry. Like I was a cancer patient. So I had breast cancer not too long ago. And so even then, I was, you know, trying to go back and forth with which ones, but I was on ashwagandha at the time as well.
Yeah. So it's a good all rounder. But so is holy basil, what we call milk thistle, or is it nothing to do with this?
No, so milk thistle is psyllium, and
Right.
psyllium is really good for your liver. So it's actually been proven. So there's a great research study that showed that psyllium is the only ingredient. So there's no pharmaceutical ingredient, no nothing else that can actually help to regenerate liver cells. So for those of us who have liver damage or have, say, non-alcoholic steatorrhea or non-alcoholic disease, where we're, and this is a common one, for especially for people who have poor diets, is where their liver starts to get affected. And so for those who are have got a taxed liver, having a little bit of milk thistle is wonderful. Holy basil is also known as tulsi in our culture. So you might see it labeled as tulsi, T-U-L-S-I, tulsi, or you'll see it labeled as holy basil. And so this botanical is, again, it's another safe one. It's a great one to use for that high stress state. You can get it as a tea, or you can get it as a capsule. And it helps with, you know, again, when you're in that, it doesn't, I always say when people have like that stressed state, it helps to moderate the stress so that you're not reacting to all stresses.
Fantastic. So, you know, actually, if you're working on other systems, so when you're looking at mental health, are you just looking in effect, you know, some of the things you've mentioned, like ashwagandha work in effect with the adrenal glands, and so it's working directly in the it to lessen mental health. But there are other sort of systems that you need to think about when working with mental health.
Yes, absolutely. So digestion is another one that I'm constantly on. You know, we our gut, it has just as many, say serotonin neurotransmitters as our brain does, if not more so. So there's a huge component to the gut, and that's where that inflammatory process really comes in. So we're going to go back and look at inflammation. So probiotics are really beneficial. So I'll look back and make sure that people are assimilating appropriately to make sure that, you know, are they absorbing the nutrients that they're supposed to be absorbing? Are they ingesting the foods that they're supposed to be, you know, that are appropriate for them and not causing issues. So New Roots has got some excellent probiotics that they've got that are all, you know, in a, they're all multitudes of bacteria within them, good bacteria, because you don't also just want to focus on one strain in particular, you know, you may, but generally you want to have a wide scope of bacteria, something that mimics what's in your gut. So if you have like a lot of the digestive issues like gas, bloating, you know, or diarrhea, constipation, or any of the above, then, you know, that's also going to play a role with your mood because you're not able to absorb your nutrients appropriately. So, you know, adding a certain probiotic at that point is also beneficial as well. And then, like I said, sometimes if we're not sure which ones to do, just, you know, trying to get some of like the wide scope ones, like the Probilartes, or the Acidophilus Ultra, things like that, that are in through New Roots.
So what's in, because, you know, I'm like, unfortunately, we came to this interview a little late, and I'm in a phone box, as you can see, and I'm going to be thrown out. So we're going to do this again. So for sure. So I just want to sort of like, you know, as we're not finishing yet, but as we finish,
Yeah.
I just want to sort of, if you've got some kind of case history that's just, you know, in your mind that you want to just chat through briefly, you know, to give us an idea of the journey.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so I've got, you know, so many patients I could draw from, but one of the ones that I'm going to talk about specifically, so I had one patient who, so this patient had generalized anxiety disorder. And so he was diagnosed, and I was working with the psychiatrist and the clinical psychologist at the clinic I was at. And so I was, involved. I love team-based care. So they came down to see me, generalized anxiety disorder as well. They also had schizoaffective personality disorder, and they were seeing delusions. So this person came to me with the with a on, you know, a number of medications, wanting to see if he could lower some of them, as well as help to improve his status, because he wasn't sleeping very well at night and he wanted to socialize a bit more. He was pretty isolated. And so as I started working with him, we first started to work on his sleep. And so remember, we talked about that serotonin pathway, and that serotonin pathway ends in melatonin. So melatonin supports all that. So I was like, okay, so one of the things we're going to do is we're going to incorporate a small amount of melatonin. I like to, unless we're doing cancer care, I like to do a very small amount of melatonin, like 1 to 3 milligrams. And the reason I do that is because I just want to give the trigger in the brain to say, hey, this is a time we sleep. Whether the person sleeps or not is not the issue. It's I just want that pineal gland to be just to be nudged and reminded so that we can start to create that serotonin that we need to do. So I incorporate some melatonin, high dose fish oils, and I focus on having, in this case, because we were looking at anxiety, I wanted to have a high amount of EPA. As you know, fish oil is made up of EPA and DHA. And in certain scenarios, we want to have higher DHA, especially with our, say, ASD autistic patients or even our schizophrenic patients. But in this case, because his major concern was around anxiety, I focused on the higher EPA, which drastically lowers inflammation and helps to increase that cell membrane fluidity to make sure that those neurotransmitters, all the good ones that he's producing and creating, will actually transmit from one cell to the next cell to the next cell. So then melatonin, high dose EPA, and I gave him some magnesium because as a society, we're all horribly low in magnesium. And magnesium is one of those, when you look at all the pathways that create wonderful neurotransmitters in our brain, they need magnesium. So I gave him some, and there's so many different types of magnesium, and I can spend like an hour just talking about all the different forms of magnesium, because there's magnesium citrate, magnesium glycinate, and how we can, and which ones they're good for, especially from a mental wellness perspective. So in his case, I gave glycinate. So magnesium glycinate, because glycine is the amino acid that helps with the GABA receptors that helps induce that calming sense, that anti-anxiety effect. So I was like, perfect. And it doesn't have the digestive stuff that happens usually with like a magnesium citrate or oxate. So I gave him the magnesium glycinate, which helped to calm him down, promoted the magnesium, which promoted his own neurotransmitter productions of what he needed. And then the next thing we know, we ended up lowering his he was on some of the anti-anxiety medications, some of the benzodiazepines, and we were able to lower off some of the benzodiazepines altogether. After, you know, it took a few months. And then the other thing we worked on was his diet. And so from a dietary perspective, I'm a big proponent of the Mediterranean diet, since it's one of the ones, you know, and there's many others out there, but, you know, in his case, the Mediterranean diet, because we knew it worked so well for mental health. And we knew that it has high amount of antioxidants. It's got all the good polyunsaturated fatty acids from the olive oil coming in. And so that was one that we incorporated within his diet. And so by massively changing around his diet from like that standard American diet or that processed food diet, we worked on all those and we were able to see some good success. He was able to start sleeping a bit more. And his next goals, he was actually open to start socializing a bit more. He wanted to work on dating eventually. So he's working with the psychologist to do that. But we were able to lower off one medication and then we were working on some of the others as well. So balancing blood sugar levels through the Mediterranean diet, and I can get into a whole thing around anxiety and blood sugar levels and how they all sort of play together too. But that's some of the key things that I had done with that patient.
So in summary, what's your sort of, apart from the ashwagandha, what's your top favorite, kind of herb or nutraceutical that you can think of that you can just say, this is my favorite?
Oh, absolutely. So the Zen Plus that's with New Roots, it's got some fantastic ingredients. So like I said, ashwagandha, amazing. Holy basil. So I tease my students. I tell them, I'm like, you know, if I was to have a child, I'll name her passion flower. And so Zen Plus has passion flower, and passion flower is by far one of my favorites. If you look it up, it's such a beautiful plant. It's a beautiful flower. It's purple and it's blossoming, and it's known to help to improve those GABA receptors. So it actually works like a benzodiazepine, but without all the side effects and the addictive properties of benzodiazepines. And so passion flower is great because it works right away. You take it when you need it and then you just stop. So that's a big one for me. Passion flower is one where, you know, it's relatively safe, except if you are taking benzodiazepines, then I usually say, you know, make sure you're talking to a healthcare professional who knows what they're doing. Obviously in the tea form, I'm not too worried, but it's more when you get into the tincture and capsule forms. Anytime you're making health changes, you know, consult a health professional. But passion flower, oh, and it tastes fantastic. So my next dog, I think, is going to be named passion flower by the looks of it. So that's a great one, as well. And it's in that formulation too.
Fantastic. So listen, as we close today, we'll do this again for sure.
Yeah.
You know, we have to just say that you're in Las Vegas at 6 o'clock in the morning in some room that you've managed to persuade yourself into. So
I had to coerce the cleaners. I'm like, please let me in.
So, yeah. So what with one thing and another, we've got to have a little shorter time, but I don't think that's really mattered at all. It's been great to get to know you. And for now, we'll say, you know, a big goodbye and a thank you. And a thank you to New Roots as well. And we will definitely do it again. If you can, that would be amazing. Yeah.
So, that'd be wonderful. I look forward to that. It's been such a great, I'm so glad to have been able to chat with you. There's so many fascinating things that we can talk about.
No, definitely. We need a lot longer next time. So we'll plan that, you know, book in straight away. We can do another one. And, but for now, it's good to get something in the can. And we'll say goodbye for now. But thank you so much and go well.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.